You just tuned into the hippest way to start and grow your indie author career. Learn the ins, the outs, and all the all-arounds of self-publishing with the team from D2D and their industry-influencing guests. You're listening to Self-Publishing Insiders with Draft to Digital.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Dan Wood from Draft to Digital. Unfortunately, it looks like there's been a little bit of miscommunication or something, and we're missing Craig. So I have invited not Craig Martell, a.k.a. Mark Leslie Lefebvre, here to talk with me. And I thought we'd just kind of chat a little bit about everything that's going on. We've certainly been quite busy. You know, it's been kind of an interesting couple of weeks. The last few, at the very beginning of everything that happened with the COVID-19 virus, sales went down a little bit, and then really in the last 2 weeks, they've really, really picked up quite a bit. So it's been keeping us really busy. We've been working on several promotions. A lot of our library partners are trying to help libraries as they're getting unprecedented demand for content. So Mark, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I have to say, I really, really like Craig Martell, and I listen to him a lot, so I may be able to channel a little bit of him. I tried really hard to find a T-Rex costume. I don't have one in the house.
So. Yeah, do your impersonation of Craig.
Yeah, and I don't even have the really cool skirt thing that he wears, right? Like, because I'm not
the kilt.
Yeah. The kilt, yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, we'll just wing it, and then we'll get him rescheduled one of these days.
That sounds good. Now we were talking about the library markets, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been impressed with that, and I think it's gonna get better when you realize, like, in where I am in Waterloo, Ontario, you can't. The libraries are all closed, so. Yeah. Obviously, the libraries are doubling down to serve the community, to help provide content. So if you do not already have the Libby app, you should check it out on your Android or iPhone. Check out the Libby app. If you have a library card, you may not be able to go in and get one, but you can still usually digitally apply for one. Add your library card, and then you can see how easy it is to get audiobooks and ebooks from your local library. And of course, if you're not submitting to the library markets through Draft to Digital, I strongly suggest you do that as well.
Oh, definitely. We are big, big fans of libraries around here. So you definitely want to be submitting to, right now we go to Overdrive, Hoopla, Baker & Taylor, and Bibliotheca. Yeah. They all reach different library markets. Yeah. So we highly recommend those. We've got others that we're talking to in the future, and so we'll just keep adding library systems. We'll keep adding international retailers. We'll keep adding anybody that we can work with that can help us sell more books.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
So it looks like we've already got one question. So let's go ahead and like I said, our guest did not make it for this one, so we're going to just open things up for questions.
Yeah, if Craig shows up, I'll duck
so if
away.
If you guys have any questions, we'll get to them. So VJ asks, does writing series help in selling books? How many books should one write in a series to see breakout?
It's a great question.
It's a great one.
Well, let me try and channel my inner Craig Martell. Let me tell you this, VJ, from my perspective as an author who has only ever written one book in a series, as well as working really closely with my friend Sean Costello, who has only written standalone novels. We had a book bub last week for one of Sean's books, so that's obviously, you know, the free book. Because it didn't tie into a series, the sales of the other titles don't happen as quickly. So, for example, if you're buying or you're downloading book one in a series, a lot of times, if it looks like a series you're going to enjoy and a character and universe you're going to enjoy, oftentimes on the day that you get that free first in series download from a BookBub, people will go on and buy often the whole series or a number of them at a time. And I think there's no definitive number. There's no definitive number, but I do know historically from traditional publishing and even from since 2011 when it really started, indie publishing really started to take off, it wasn't often until book three. And so in traditional publishing, the publishers would often stick with an author until book three came out. And it was after book three or book four that that started to take off. And I remember it was authors like Bella Andre and Barbara Freethy and Tina Folsom, who were huge in romance, are still huge in romance, but they were some of the first breakaway authors with romance series. And they said it was book three or book four. Because again, Bella and Tina and Barbara do come from traditional publishing, so they had lived in that world before, and they said it wasn't all that different. So and then a lot of authors would use now, one of the things, I'm going to channel Craig because I have read several of his books, is you do not have to subscribe to rapid release, right? So you don't have to have book one out and then the 30-day cliff and book two and book three, because that can be exhausting. What Craig says is critical and is important. Is if you set an expectation with your reader, meet it. If the expectation is every 30 days, don't fail them. If the expectation is every 6 months, don't fail that. Or if it's once every year, just be consistent. And I think that was one of the amazing takeaways I remember from the last time I was chatting with him about that strategy, is you do not have to write fast. But I do believe that having a series is important. And when speaking of series, let's make sure that you're putting in the right metadata, right? So that you have the series metadata, book one, book two. Many of the platforms will allow you to do a point, 1.1, two, stuff like that. So that's something. I hope that helped answer a little bit of that.
Yeah, I think that was a great answer. It also really helps with your marketing. There are a lot of different opportunities out there that make a lot more sense if you can market a series. And so you're not trying to make your return on investment off of just one book. The margins on ebooks are fairly low. And so it makes a lot more sense when you can market that first book, and you might even lose money on that first book. We know a lot of authors give away the first books even for free, but where they're going to make the money is off of the subsequent books. And so you want to make sure, with your series, that you understand what your read through is, because that's going to help you determine what's a good spend for your marketing. I had a follow up question to that just on my own. Mark, do you feel like there is a hard limit to how many books you should have, or do you think that a series can keep going indefinitely? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, come on, let's look at the television show Supernatural. How many seasons is it? No.
Is it 12 now? 13?
14, something like that.
I lost count. Yeah.
I think, honestly, if your readers are satisfied and you are satisfied and everyone is happy, why stop, right? It's you kind of feel them out. And I think there was a comment from Nikki. I think that's probably a good follow-up as well. But yeah, it just depends. Is it natural? Or you get into the point where, and The Simpsons make fun of this a lot of times, where a TV series gets to the point where they should have stopped, and they even mock themselves. Was that 30 years that they've been on the air? But I think if the audience, if your readers are enjoying it and you're still enjoying it and profiting from it, I think you'll know when it's right. There's something in our guts that tells us whether or not we should continue something or not.
Right.
And so that may be a guiding factor.
I always respected the way, I think it was, Bella Andre that I first heard is from, but just the way in which she would introduce new characters, be they like with her, a lot of it revolves around family and the different family members getting their romantic connection and finding keeping the series connected, but going on a new series. And so she would then move on and like some of their family in another city, like their cousins. Yeah. And so you get to meet the characters and still hear about the characters from the previous books you loved, but you'd also kind of get something a little bit new.
And sometimes if somebody's written in to you and said, I really enjoyed these characters, when can we hear about their relationship, or when can we see them?
Yeah.
Right. Or I really love this, in a murder mystery series, where I really like the supporting detective that we only see on and off. Could you spin off your own show? Your show. I'm speaking in television terms. See, I'm going back and I'm rewatching Cheers and remembering that Frasier was a spinoff of that, and so was Wings. I'm showing my age, aren't I?
Not really. I grew up watching Wings and all of those. Yeah.
Okay.
So Nikki Mon commented, well, I wouldn't go ahead and set out to write a 20-book series without having a pit stop midway to see if people are enjoying the series and if you're enjoying the creation process, which I completely agree with. Kind of, I do think you should at least stick with a series through that third book. I think that's a really good benchmark. And if things start moving after the third book and you still love writing that series, go ahead and keep writing that series. If it's not working out the way you plan, maybe you look at other ideas at that point.
So I like Nikki's point, but Nikki's point is check in with your readers, right? You know, what's the feedback that you're getting? Is it actually working for everyone?
I will say that readers really want an end. So like if you're in the middle of a series and you've set up a lot of things that you haven't answered, you're probably going to make people angry if you just like, okay, I'm done with that series. Like give them some resolution. It's the same way with watching TV shows. I can't tell you how infuriating it's been over the years to watch so many of my favorite shows get canceled. Like Firefly, Jericho. I don't know if you remember Jericho, but the world post-apocalyptic. It was a really cool show, and we got no real ending. They went on and like finished it a little bit in comic books, but it wasn't the same. Yeah. All right, let's go on. Richard Asher, any tips for writing and marketing in the self-help genre? Also seems the style there is extremely formulaic. Is it wise to try and break out of that?
So self-help genre, you're talking about, let's say, personal fitness or, you know.
Self-improvement, I think. Self-improvement, you know, mindset. I think those would probably all fit into that.
Well, I think the key thing to remember is when you're writing self-help. So let's talk about Craig Martell, because this is Craig Martell's spot, and we've got to channel him as much as possible. Right, Craig Martell is a brand in and of itself, right? Like as part of with Michael Anderle in the 20 books to 50K, as a brand of an author who is there to help other authors, who's been successful, who has butt in chair, written the words, worked really, really hard. And so all of his nonfiction books, which are self-help books for other writers, his brand is that. So I think one of the key things when you think about writing and marketing the self-help genre is, what is the brand that you have? What is the expertise that you have? If you are, I think of someone like Roland Denzel, who is an author who does, he's a trainer, a physical trainer, coach, lifestyle, proper eating, right? He has that background. So that's part of what his brand is. So making sure that you, Richard, as the author brand, that's really, really critical. Like, where are you coming from, and how is that brand really, really important? You think of people like Joanna Penn as well, right? She's got that huge, she is an author, but she has a huge brand as somebody who helps authors under the Creative Pen brand. So I think that's critical, and there's some authenticity involved. In terms of the style and of the writing of the book, I would try to be as authentic as you can to your own voice and the way that you would actually share this advice and help. But there are, I mean, the marketing is significant. I think it's different than marketing a series of fiction novels.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. I think it's important to kind of know what the readers expect. And so that might be the formulaic part you're thinking about.
Oh, and Richard said, I saw a comment. He said, saving money. That's the topic. Sorry.
Yeah. You definitely want to inject your own voice. And so be as much like other things as you need to be to get the point across. And like, so sometimes there are reasons why things come off as formulaic. You know, they're definitely within fiction. There are tropes that readers just expect within a given category. Okay. But, you know, if something just doesn't really fit your messaging, feel free to play around with that and to kind of try to give it your own spin, because that's really what's going to make your book stand out in what can be a crowded market.
Yeah. So Richard, because you said your book's on saving money and maybe it's financial support and financial advice, here's some things that you could potentially be doing. Using platforms like Medium or your blog or podcast or Twitter or whatever access you have access to, and providing, I'm a huge fan of content marketing, because again, you're the brand, you're the financial expert. And let's say you can share some tips. So for example, we're all in a weird time right now. We're all wondering what to do financially, wondering what to do with groceries and things like that, is thinking about what are some strategies that can be helpful that were maybe taken from your book or taken from your understanding that you can share with people that help them. And then they recognize you as the expert. And then they go on to say, oh, he's written a book. That's something I may want to check out, because he's already providing me such value. I'm huge about the 80% giving and sharing, 20% asking, that kind of thing.
It's an interesting time, and really fiction and nonfiction work a little bit differently. I'm not a fan. Like, I don't encourage authors to blog if they're writing fiction, but for nonfiction, blogging and like having resources like video blogging, stuff like that, is a great way to build your community, to build your audience. Podcasting can be a great thing to do. And so just some different ideas that you can go with. So we had MA. I'm not even going to try to say that. Are you using software other than native Facebook functionality to manage this webinar for authors who might want to do similar online events, maybe for cross promotions with authors?
Should we share our secrets?
Yes, because like we've gone through what, 4 or 5 different solutions. Like we've been, it took us a while. We were looking and looking. Right now, we've kind of settled on StreamYard, and we've been very happy with it. Primarily because it's fairly simple interface. Like it makes it really easy to show these things, like the question. It makes it easy to share the screen with multiple people. But the big seller for us was that it would stream live to both Facebook and YouTube.
Right. A lot of authors are gone off YouTube, right? Or Facebook because, you know, like I've had enough.
we had been wanting to do that for a while. And we really thought that the majority of our watchers would be on Facebook. And so we kept settling for things that were only going to Facebook Live. And then we would upload things to YouTube later. It turns out there are a lot of people that do watch live on YouTube. And so that's been great. We do get a lot more views on YouTube over time. And so it's great to have that content where we're not having to take a separate step and upload it to YouTube and wait. So it's been really cool. StreamYard makes it really easy. Like you see within the interface, people commenting from Facebook, people coming from YouTube. So we don't have to follow all of that. So it's just been really nice and makes it easy to make the little banners, to make the little graphic things. So it's been a cool little tool and we would recommend it at this point. All right. Let's see. Alyssa's got a question for us. Alyssa is our awesome graphic designer. She's in charge of our user experience. She basically does everything. We just don't tell everybody that she does everything, and we just kind of sit back and gain.
You take all the credit for that.
So what's the best way to get feedback from readers?
Ask. It sounds like a silly answer, but you actually have to ask. If you don't ask, you're definitely not going to get feedback. How do you ask? Back of the book, right? Finish the book. I've often even put my email address in. Even with my traditionally published books, I say, hey, I'd love to hear from you what you thought of the book. This is my email address. And obviously sign up for your author newsletter. And in your newsletter, you can ask for feedback. You can ask for that sort of thing. If you've got Facebook groups for your readers, you can use social media in that. I found Instagram really, really great for trying to get participation from people. So other ideas?
If you're doing that 80-20 thing that Mark was talking about, and you're sharing things with your readers that they might be interested in on your social media, every once in a while, just remind them how important reviews are to authors, because they are really make or break for a lot of books. Other things I've seen people do, you mentioned just – how many people do we talk to when we do the free consultations after our Ask Us Anything at the, we do that once a month, and we end up doing quite a few consultations, just one-on-one. And 9 times out of 10, I'm telling people, just make sure at the end of your book that you're asking people to sign up for your newsletter and you're asking them for a review, because people just forget to do that. So that is really the number one thing, is ask people. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah. And I also remind, because some were nice to read, but they're not sure. They're like, well, I'm not Siskel and Ebert. I don't know how to do these extensive reviews and stuff. It does not need to be fancy. It doesn't need to be like an essay that you never learned how to write in high school. It is simple, just 1 or 2 honest lines about what you thought of the book. And sometimes assuring. Actually, I would even recommend with your author newsletter, since we're talking techniques and things, with your author newsletter, when they sign up, you're often giving them something for free. You can set auto response for 1 to 2 weeks later to say, hey, hope you didn't have any problems downloading the book or whatever. if you did, let me know. And if you did read it, I would love to appreciate a review. And there's lots of these little cute visual memes that say the best way to help an author is to leave a review. And you can even share something like that just to remind them. And even, and remind them honest reviews. I think that's even valuable, because I see a lot of books that are, 100% five-star reviews. And the first thing I think of, I'm an optimistic guy who believes in the goodness of people. But when I see nothing but five-star reviews, I think that's fake. It's not real. There's no way. You look at major authors like Craig Martell, and even Craig doesn't have nothing like all five-star reviews, because the bigger an author is, the more they sell. The Stephen Kings, the James Pattersons, the Craig Martells of the world, they will have one-star and two-star reviews, either from people who, were just reviewing the fact that it didn't download to their Kindle properly, which happens, unfortunately, or it was just the wrong person, right? Yeah. They thought, for some reason, they thought, they thought it was this kind of book, or it was so popular, they thought they'd try it, but it's not their cup of tea. And that's the authentic nature of the reviews are important.
Yeah, no one really wants to read a book that's made for everyone. You can't please everyone with a single book. And so,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Let's go on to Richard has a question about, I remember something about Apple promo codes being available via D2D, but I don't remember the details. Can you refresh us, please? Was that for pre-orders? Is there something similar for any other stores? With the Apple promo codes, you just email our customer support. It's support@drafttodigital.com, and they can send you some of those. They do. I believe, if I remember correctly, they are like, have like a limited time span. And so it's something you don't want to order as many codes as you can get, but order a certain amount of codes and then try to give all those out. You encourage people with those codes to leave reviews. That's kind of the main reason those codes are there. They're the only major retailer that has that is Audible. If you're thinking about audiobooks, they have codes. But Apple is the main one that does the codes for the books. It can be on any book. It doesn't have to be on a pre-order. If your pre-order has the asset already, like if you've uploaded it and you've already finished the book, then I believe you can give away a code for the pre-order. And so, if you're really curious about that part, contact our customer support, because they know all the ins and outs of that. They'll be able to explain everything in much better detail now than I could. But yeah, those are, again, another way to try to get more reviews, because reviews are going to help you sell more books.
And Richard, thank you for calling them Apple rather than iBooks. They do greatly appreciate that, Apple Books. So nice one.
We've been trying to train ourselves to remember to say Apple Books now instead of iBooks. Doris M. Fabiano asks, I'd like to know about your distributor of physical books in USA and Brazil. So our distribution, we don't currently have author copies in Brazil, although for selling books that go through print on demand, any of the stores that have print on demand that offer it, if someone buys it, it would go through, it essentially ends up going through the Ingram network. So as long as Ingram has someone in Brazil, it would print out through there and then ship out of there.
Yeah.
In the U.S., IPG is our partner for print. They handle all of the author copy side of things. When people purchase a book, like off Amazon or Barnes & Noble, the places where they have print on demand listed, it might go through several different vendors. It's kind of a shadowy world of people that print things out, depending on where you're located, because they're trying to save on costs. And so everything's kind of distributed to whoever's closest and can ship it for cheapest. Here's a nice one. Casper Park says, I've been with D2D since I opened. Great customer service. Thank you.
So we should pause and say thank you to all the awesome Draft Digital customer service reps that are right now talking to authors and answering your emails.
They really are amazing. You can talk to them via email. You talk to them via phone. Like, it just really have gone above and beyond. So we've really, we love our customer service. They do so much for the company. Jamie Evan Books, do you still need an email list or newsletter, or social media the way to go? Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, etc. We love this question.
I think what I love about an email list or a newsletter is that you're in control. You're not relying on any other platform. There are authors. T.S. Paul is a perfect example of an author who does not have his own website, does not have his own newsletter. He's doing exceptionally well. And it's all been through Facebook. It's been through Facebook ads. It's been through his Facebook pages. The thing that frightens me about that is if Facebook goes away or changes things, he may not have a way to reach the people that he wants to. So I prefer the idea of an email list or a newsletter. Social media is it can be a complement to that. You can also engage with people in social media, but oftentimes, so for example, on my Instagram feed right now, there's a thing that I'm doing with author readings on Wednesday night. And what I have is I have the link is in my bio. Well, it's my bio goes to my webpage, but it goes to a specific page of my webpage, which is whatever I plan on promoting or I'm featuring, like a new book or this particular event. And so I'm using Instagram or Twitter or Facebook as complements to either my author page or to something that's going on. I do like the idea of it being something you can control, right? So not to my Amazon Author Central page, not, you know, but to a something a little bit more universal. Maybe it's the Books to Read, the free author page you get with every time. It's automatically created for you. You publish a book from draft to digital, you have an author page and you can control it. And that landing page in my mind is critical because it doesn't just send you to a single retailer. It sends you to whatever retailer the customer wants to buy from.
Right. So we are a big proponent. Like, we do think it's a best practice to have the email list because it's one of the few things where you control the platform. You can move your email list around from different vendors like MailChimp and MailerLite. Whereas with Facebook, they control your relationship. So a few years ago when they cut the amount of organic visibility of if people had liked your page, it went from they would see most of your posts to they see like less than 10% unless you pay them. And any of those platforms can do that at any time. And so you really, the email list is the only one you control. And so you can make sure readers know that you have a new release. You know, you've got things like Amazon will let you subscribe to authors, but they don't always email people out when you have a new release because they're kind of governed by, they try to only send out so many emails, and they're probably going to send the email out about a new TV versus your book because they make a lot more money off the new TV. Yeah. So just something we know that they don't alert people all the time when an author they're subscribed to has a new release. There are other places like BookBub has like a notification system about new releases as well. Yeah. But then again, they also control it. And so if they change something in the future, they might start charging for that. Email, you control it. Under a certain amount, most of the email services have a free tier. Once you get to a certain number of subscribers, you're going to have to start spending money on it. But at that number of subscribers, you're going to kind of understand their value to you, and the money's going to make perfect sense.
Yeah.
Nikki Mond, what's your take on author brand? I've heard I should use a different name for different genres, but also heard from others it should all be under the same author, but with clear covers. Mr. Lefebvre, how do you feel about this?
So I pay attention. You have two brands, don't you? What's that?
You have two brands, right? Or do you
do everything? Well, I have two brands. So I have Mark Leslie, and the reason I did that is because Lefebvre is practically impossible for people to spell or pronounce.
I have to look it up every time. I'm like,
yeah, I know. People have known me for years, still can't get it right. So what I had done is I just dropped my last name because my middle name was Leslie, and I wrote under that. And I did that for a long, long time. And I write horror and paranormal stuff and true ghost stories and all that stuff. When I wanted to start releasing nonfiction books about writing and publishing, because since 92 I've been known in the industry as Mark Lefebvre, I wanted to have those two different brands. So the Mark Lossie, who's the spooky guy with the skulls and stuff, and then Mark Leslie Lefebvre, which is the name I use for the nonfiction. So that's because there's certain consistency, and I do get a teeny tiny bit of crossover. I think about authors like Christine Catherine Rush, who, 40 years of traditional publishing, and Chris used to have to write under multiple names because in traditional publishing, you were only allowed, or the publishers only wanted one book a year, but Chris worked with multiple publishers. So she went with different names, like Chris Grayson or Christine Grayson and other names to write slightly different genres, because that was the way that the traditional publishing industry worked. Well, she's since gone back to bringing them all back. And then it's usually Christine Catherine Rush writing as Chris Grayson. Now, one of the reasons why a different author name may work is they may recognize your name as a cozy mystery author here, but then you want to write mystery or romance, let's say erotic romance, and you know the crossover between the audience isn't going to be huge, you may go with a different name, because what you don't want people to do is pick up and get the wrong impression.
Right. Sci-fi or fantasy, those readers tend to read both sci-fi and fantasy, so it's probably better to have just one pen name or one name you're under. With things that are very different, like cozy mystery and erotic romance, or like if you are
right, no erotic books, cozy romance,
you kind of have to separate them.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just being cheeky, saying there's no erotic cozy romances, are there?
Not yet, but okay. We can work on that. I'm actually thinking about my bad boy witch cozy mystery series. So
very good, very good. But it was a good question. Great question, Nikki.
Can you comment on the value to authors of investing time in optimizing for SEO on our author website?
So this makes me think.
Hey, it looks like Craig is here.
Craig is here. Okay, right. I'm gonna slip away and let the really smart guy jump.
Pull him in.
There he is.
Sorry, man. Sorry about that. I lost track of time, and I'm like, oh my god, it's a half hour after I was supposed to be here.
No worries.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. We've been talking. Actually, we can just kind of go if people have some questions for Craig. I've got some questions for Craig. And so, we've just been kind of – we had a lot of questions come up, so it's been cool. Do you want to stick around, Mark? Or?
Will you kick me out so you can see more of Craig?
All right.
No.
Later, Mark.
I see a question on the screen. I mean, it looks good. SEO, it just depends. How much of your sales go through your website? Or how much traffic are you trying to drive to your website? So if your back matter, my back matter, I try to drive everybody to my website. So any random searches, are they searching and going to my website? Or are they searching and finding me on Amazon? So I personally don't invest a lot to optimize SEO, but that's because I drive my own personal traffic to my website, and I get 250 to 300 hits a day on my website. But I sell books through Amazon, so I try to drive the most traffic.
The SEO thing works a little bit better for nonfiction than with fiction. And then with fiction, I feel like people generally are searching on their bookstore. And so in a lot of cases, it's going to be Amazon. So I agree. SEO, not a thing to spend a waste a lot of your time on as an author.
Yeah, well, but as a nonfiction, that's a great point. Does somebody Mike Bray actually recommended, he's like, hey, a website is up for sale. They've been around for 22 years, which is an SEO home run.
Right.
He said, you might want to consider that for your nonfiction. So I took a look. It was a little bit spendy because I don't try to make money off my nonfiction, but right. I could see where that would be a home run. Absolutely.
I know Readzy does a lot of that. They look for those domains that authors tend to go to, and they try to pick them up, like if they're no longer being used for anything, because it is just very powerful with the SEO. So I'm glad you made it. First of all, I really wanted to talk to you a little bit. First of all, you're a best-selling author at Amazon. You've been really doing awesome for the last few years. You are one of the founding members of 20 Books to 50K, and you really have put on one of the best conferences for indie authors in the world now. Will this year be the fourth one? It's the third or fourth.
Right now, I think Vegas is definitely on for November. We'll make a final decision shooting in July because we funnel all payments through PayPal. And PayPal has a 180-day return policy where you just find that payment, you click refund. So we have to make a final decision in July. Otherwise, the refund process is far more painful and time-consuming, like triple the amount of time for a single refund as opposed to just clicking a couple buttons and there you go, Bob's your uncle. So we'll make that decision in July, and we should be good. Looking at the numbers, the predictability curves and things, I think we're going to be okay. Now, the conferences and conventions and those things are going to have to be different because the in-person, the quality of the face-to-face meetups, it's going to have to be a little bit different, like more space.
Yeah, instead definitely.
So, of course, we're jammed in Samstown for this last one. But the ones 2021 and 2022, we're going to have an awful lot of space, and that's going to be a big benefit. But we'll have hand sanitizer. We'll have a lot of time in between sessions so people can go wash their hands and a no-shake hands policy. But I think people will be well experienced in not doing that come November. Right. So.
And for those of you who aren't familiar, the 20 Books to 50K Vegas Conference happens in November every year. It's become one of the best ones because Craig has gotten nearly everyone from the industry is there. This year, I think there are, is it 1,200 people signed up already?
1,600.
Wow. Like it just keeps growing almost like every year. It seems like it doubles or not quite doubles. So, yeah. A great conference. The venue has been really good for the past couple of years, but I think we're all looking forward to moving on next year to the Strip.
Yeah.
But it's a good chance to hear from a lot of best-selling authors in the world and in various different genres, people that are like killing it on Amazon and being exclusive with Amazon, people that are wide and are selling everywhere. So it's a conference I highly recommend. You've also done a lot of like smaller conferences, just kind of all over the world now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We've done, Adelaide in Australia. We did Bali as a very, Bali was an exclusive event, a very high dollar event. We did, London as well as Edinburgh.
Right.
And for the next few years, we're going to focus, almost exclusively on Vegas, make Vegas the show. And, it's 1600 people this year and we'll be 2,500 to 3,000 next year. So next year, our hope is that we don't sell out. We really don't want to. Selling out in one day, I mean, it's cool to say, oh, hey, our conference sells out in one day, but then we have an awful lot of disappointed people.
Right.
Now, we record those sessions and make them available. Just go to YouTube and look 20 Books to 50K, our channel. All the sessions are there. Dan Wood has been in a couple sessions on panels. And you can see him or Mark Lefebvre. Kevin Tomlinson did a session in 2019 specifically on bootstrapping, how to write, publish, market your book on a shoestring budget. Right. So look up that session. And there's a lot of good things. So the big benefit this year is Apple's coming and they're bringing 2 to 3 people. So we'll have Apple, we'll have Kobo, we'll have if you go to audio, we'll have Findaway Voices, Tantor, Podium. Tantor's bringing 6, Podium's bringing 4 representatives. So a lot of people that will support your business and help you make better business decisions. Like who do you want to go with and what does that look like? So if you can look them in the face and talk to them, man, it doesn't get any better than that.
Definitely. So you are also a hybrid author, right? Like you've got both traditional and you're mostly indie. Would you talk a little bit about being a hybrid author? Because I think a lot of new authors also don't realize it's not a choice of either or, but there are times when it makes sense to be both traditionally published and indie published.
Yeah, I got a traditional contract 4 years ago. So the contracts back then were a little different than they are now. I didn't have the ethics clause that, oh, my God, if you posted something on Facebook that we find objectionable,
Yeah. We're
going to terminate you and hate you forever and ever. So I don't have that now. I try to maintain my brand. I try not to have any spread any hate. But those 4 books, they continue to earn. I get a quarterly paycheck. When I first published, it was like 8 months later before I actually saw the first money from that. I did not get an advance, but I got a really good royalty rate, which is what I preferred. So that I think that worked to my favor over time. And it also got me into Barnes & Noble. It got me into places that you wouldn't otherwise get. So it gave me visibility. And as you know, all visibility is good visibility, and going those different routes. So that alone was worth it. Yes, I make a lot more money with my self-published titles, but the hybrid, the traditional stuff is way, way cool.
Yeah. I know for some people, one of their goals is to be in bookstores. And by far the best way to get into bookstores is through traditional publishing right now. We hope that changes over time. But like Greg said, you're going to make so much more money selling online. Just every author in general, other than, you know, maybe for Stephen King, that's not the case, but in most cases,
James Patterson and yeah, right. Those people who and J.D. Robb, Nora Roberts. And when you go into Barnes & Noble and you see that front table where they have all the most the new releases, and it's all names that you know, it's Dean Koontz, it's Stephen King, it's James Patterson, it's J.D. Robb. Their publishers pay like $100,000 to get that book on that table. So they're paying Barnes & Noble before they make any sales. But of course, that helps sales. In airports, it's the same thing. Here are the books you're gonna sell, because you go into airports and you see the same books across all the airports nationwide, and it's because of that. And that's traditional publishing owns that market, but they have this huge behemoth of a logistics chain to support that. That's why you can't just go to your airport and say, "Hey, why don't you carry my book?" Oh no, there's a lot of moving parts between the publisher and getting into an airport. You saw Mark Dawson. It took him an incredible amount of time to sign a different contract with a paperback publisher to get him into airports.
It's always been amazing to me, once I started going to things like the London Book Fair, how complex the supply chain is for the book industry. All the middlemen, like there's so many middlemen in the whole process. A lot of the traditional publishers are using other people to handle, how they're all their printing, they're using other people to handle their ebook delivery to the different vendors. It just blew my mind. So let's go on. We had a question about marketing from Stipe. I have a question regarding book marketing awareness. Can you recommend us which ways we can take to successfully market our books? That's a big question. Do you have got any thoughts about where you'd start with marketing?
Oh, I do. And that's breaking down the terms. Marketing is your marketing campaign is how you determine you want to sell your book or series. I write in series because it's far more lucrative, because once you bring a reader on board, if you can get them to go to read book 2, 3, 4, now you have this continuing value stream from a single reader. So let's talk series. So what does your marketing campaign for a series look like? I buy paid promotions, like with eReader News Today, Book Barbarian, because I'm in sci-fi. Robin Reads, a number of other sites that maintain newsletters. I've also been successful with a few BookBub international featured deals. And this is, they're sending email to 1 million, 2 million people in my genre. So you get that, you align these other, you stack your promotions so you have sales over a certain amount of time, but you have to have promotions, which in a series, I always promote the first book, or the omnibus edition, which is a complete set, but I only put the omnibuses up if I'm in Kindle Unlimited, because there's a certain price variation that somebody looks at and says, is it worth buying or is it worth just borrowing? But they see it because a lot of people are buying it, jumps up in the ranks, and the visibility improves of that book. So marketing, I market the first book. I market it hard. I run Amazon ads. If it's a long series, I'll run Facebook ads on that first book. And I'm willing to take a loss, but I love seeing it when I spend $60 a day on a combination of Amazon and Facebook ads and make more than that on the first book. So then everything beyond that is gravy. So this is the marketing thing. Understand your first book. Work the blurb. The cover gets them to look at the blurb. The blurb sells the book. So keep rewickering your blurbs to make sure they are not a synopsis, but a sales thing. It's like clickbait. You have to one click this title. that's the big thing that you need to do to sell books. And whether it's through Barnes & Noble or Apple, that blurb has to be a home run.
I always tell people, most people are only ever going to see your cover. So spend money on a cover, like work with a cover designer that knows the genre. You do want your book to look like the other bestsellers within that genre, enough to where people know, hey, this is a sci-fi space opera. Maybe stand out a little bit, but not much. And then that blurb, really, really heavy sales. It's not a description. So many people just write, like, here's a synopsis of my story. And it's like, no, please. That just doesn't work.
The good thing about Drafted Digital is you do the blurb once, and then you guys make sure all the distributors get it.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're having to enter it on every one of their different websites. They all handle the bold versus italic thing very differently. I wanted to see if you'd elaborate a little bit. You talked a little bit about stacking the ads over time. Why would you do that rather than having all of the ads on one day?
A big spike day is an anomaly in their computer systems, and the distributors, whether it's Amazon or Apple or Kobo or Barnes & Noble, they don't like anomalies. They like consistently high sales. So even though you can spike for 1,000 sales in a day, you're better off getting 250 sales over 4 days, because it won't look like an anomaly. And their systems, their algorithms will start looking at them. And when people are searching and asking questions, your book might pop in as one of the recommendations because you're a consistent seller, as opposed to we had one big spike. Right. So even though that one big spike might have come from a number of different places, depending on promotions, newsletter swaps, and successful ads, you're still, to the computer, it's just an anomaly. We had a bunch of sales on one day. Oh, can't repeat it. I'm not going to recommend that book, which because that suggests word of mouth. And now the computer is estimating, hey, there's good word of mouth on this book. So if you sell 100 the first day, you want to sell 125 the second day, 150, then you're up to 250. Now the computer's like, hey, I love this book because people are talking about it. That's how it views an increase in sales. So if you get a BookBub deal, which of course you only have 3 weeks or 4 weeks total time, and your chances of getting a BookBub feature deal in the US are better going through D2D because you're wide, then how do you stack those ads? Well, you do newsletter swaps, and what you want to do is you want that BookBub feature to be like the fifth or sixth day as you're ramping up sales. So you drop the price, you hit your own list, hey, this book is now on sale, you get some swaps, you run a bunch of ads, you dump money into ads, you get your BookBub feature, and then you run a couple after that. So it's a slow ramp up and a slow ramp down as how the computer sees it, and they will help you sell your book because they get a cut of your book sales.
We had a question earlier about the email list and if it's still important to have an email list. And that's a good, we didn't mention that, but having your own newsletter will let you do newsletter swaps with other authors within your genre. And so the more you have, the more likely they're going to be interested in working with you because you're going to recommend their book and they're going to recommend, everyone's going to recommend each other's books. And so that's just going to be another reason why you should have an email list if you're an author. I wanted to talk a little bit about collaborative authoring because you're one of the big proponents of it. You've done a lot of work. Would you talk a little bit about why you've chosen to collaborate with other authors to put out books and then some of the process behind it?
There's a number of reasons to collaborate. One is to fill gaps in your own production schedule. And gaps, that's, hey, you're still writing, but you can produce more if you're collaborating, unless you have a contentious relationship. That's why it's very important to select a good collaborator. Another is because
it's kind of like the way you think about your marriage. You're going to be stuck with that person for a very long time. And so make sure you can work together.
Yes, 7 years. Because if you get an audio contract, anywhere from 5 to 10 years, you're going to be strapped in. So you do want a good relationship and maintain good relationship. But you want to learn. You want to increase productivity. You want to increase your exposure if you collaborate with somebody who's able to get you into areas that you can't get yourself. When you collaborate, choosing a collaborator is important. You can't say, well, I think it'll work. If you're saying, I think it'll work, then it's like saying, I think I can marry that person. It's not going to work. You have to, hey, I really like this. This is a great way to write this. What do you think about this? If you're each writing the same thing in order to make it one thing that's better. I've done ones where I've written a chapter and my collaborator wrote a chapter, and we just went back and forth through the whole book with two POVs. We've done ones where I've written almost all the words, ones where other people have written almost all the words, and ones where we've separated it like 50-50. We each wrote different things. Metal Legion, I wrote some of the combat interaction, the small unit interactions, because of my experience in the military. My co-writer, his experience was based on a lot of TV and video games and stuff like that. And the banter, when he first proposed it, it was TV based. It wasn't reality based. Reality's a lot better. So I did those parts. He did the main setup in those scenes. So that worked. That worked really well. I believe it worked really well. So created a lot of content. I published most of it myself. Others we published through LMBPN, and then that money is managed there. Also, the big thing with the extra content is we signed advances through audiobooks, whether Dreamscape, Tantor, Podium, and extra revenue. Hey, the book's already there, and here now they're paying us, as opposed to I paid a lot of money to have audiobooks done. Now all of a sudden, I'm getting paid to have audiobooks done, and that's I liked that part. Yes, right. It reduces your revenue, but hey, still it's a good thing to do. It's the learning process of how other people manage their writing. The wording that's chosen, the way a scene is set up and delivered, all of that. If you're collaborating, it's your studying. So it's not just, hey, let me write these words. Okay, good. Let's go forward. No, you're working on it and trying to make it better. And two people are better than one. Two people are smarter than one. And that, as long as you have the right collaborator and you're all both working toward the right goal. Of here's the story, and you don't get quagmired in little things that aren't going to make any difference to the revenue. Because keep in mind, it's a business decision to collaborate.
Yeah, and it's going to help both of you authors, or however many authors you have working on the project. So just a really good thing to think about and look into collaborative authoring. Another thing that I kind of wanted to ask you, I believe it's earlier this morning I saw that you had a post just with some of your thoughts about, I know a lot of people right now are just really worried about COVID-19 and everything that's going on in the world. It's a great time to be an author and to have our, with DDD, we've been able to work from home since basically the very beginning of this. I just wanted to get your thoughts and just how you are encouraging authors to look at these times and all that good stuff.
Well, this is an opportunity for authors to step up. My lifestyle has almost not changed at all, except like you, I'm not going to conferences and shows, so I have no travel, which has given me more time to write. Right. I should finish a book today or tomorrow, the latest in the execution. So 70,000 words. I mean, it's a real... It's a healthy addition to the series, and that's book 9. That and we'll be able to early it up. It's on pre-order for May 18th, and we'll be able to publish it April 27th. I think is what we're going to do now. What I'm encouraging authors to do is this is your time to shine. Now, people's situations are going to be different. Some people, hey, author was great, but now the kids aren't at school all day, and I've had them at home. Great. Well, how do you set that up to your advantage so you can keep writing? So many people are descending into the depths of depression because of everything that's out of their control, and come out whenever the end of this thing is, 2 months, 9 months from now, you're going to come out of this. You're not going to have any new books because you weren't in a good mental space to do that. And this is where you have to work with your own mind, put on your business hat and say, hey, producer, artist, I need another book. And then you put on your artist hat and says, okay, I'm going to write this book because this is talking to me right now, whatever your genre is, and write the book. Get that done however you need to wicker your process. But I've started a daily show, the CNM daily show. We do an hour podcast every morning live, and then it gets uploaded to our YouTube channel, all to help authors just think about the business side and hopefully give them something to distract them from their day-to-day troubles. Especially, I mean, if your spouse is out of work now, or you had a day job and now your writing is your only income, and you realize it's a lot of pressure, especially if you never intended to be a full-time writer because you liked your job, it was comfortable, and you don't want to sit at a computer and write for 8 hours a day or do those things, market or advert, it's okay. But if your world changes, this is an opportunity. There's going to be a lag. It's going to be a couple months until you would start seeing any revenue from what you have. And that's also the challenge. But that's a challenge I think indies are up for, because we've been doing this for a lot of years. We're here. We work from home. We look at marketing. 20 books to 50K has a lot of information for advertising, for marketing, for promotions, for those things you need to do to get your book in front of potential readers.
I highly recommend, if you haven't ever checked out the Facebook group, it's 20 books to 50K. You're over 30,000 members now. Is that right?
Actually, we just creeped over 29,000. Okay. We'll be 30,000 in another. We're getting a lot of new member requests. So we'll be over 30,000 probably in a month and a half, maybe.
There's a lot of great information there that they've documented, just like common questions that keep getting asked in the group. So you can read on those. They've got their Facebook and they've got their YouTube channel where you can see both Craig's show, but there's also just videos from all the different conferences. So it's a great resource. We highly recommend people check it out. A really nice community. There's a lot of question and answer goes on in there. I know Craig and Michael Anderley contribute quite a bit there. So I would highly recommend checking out the 20 books to 50K group. Just really good for anyone, like any author, anyone involved in publishing to be familiar with. Had another question. It's left me. Let me grab one from the audience, and then I think we're going to try to close out here in about 5 minutes or so.
Yeah, sorry for joining late, man. I suck.
No worries. So on this one, hypothetically, if I went wide and marketed a book equally well on every store, what would my percentage sales breakdown look like? So that's going to look very, very different depending on genre. For ebooks, and this is specifically about ebooks, Amazon is probably about 80% in the US. It's probably 65 to 70 worldwide. Apple is going to be the number two largest digital bookstore. The thing that's kind of crazy is for romance authors, Apple can be as much as Amazon, but not for everybody. Mysteries and thrillers, Apple's pretty competitive in. Barnes and Noble is also very competitive in mysteries and thrillers. It's going to vary quite a bit. And so Amazon's probably going to be your number one store. Apple's probably going to be your number two store. Barnes & Noble, three, and Kobo, four. And I expect Kobo to overtake Barnes & Noble anytime now as far as being bigger sales. And for a lot of authors, that's the case. And then for audiobooks and for print, that all changes considerably.
Yeah.
With audiobooks, Audible is the dominant player, but they're not dominant in the way they are with ebooks. Libraries are buying a ton of audiobooks. And so that distribution is all over the place. It'd be hard for me to even give you a basic idea of where it'd be, but Audible's probably going to be your number one seller, but not by the percentages it is for ebooks.
Yeah.
All right. Well, did you have any closing thoughts you wanted to share, Craig?
I don't know. I just want people to know that there's never been a better time to be an indie, whether there's a pandemic ongoing or not. This is a great time. The market is huge. And if you are an ebook producer, I write science fiction, which does better in Amazon So I'm almost exclusive to Amazon. I do have a few books wide or available for a general download. I usually use them as reader magnets through BookFunnel, Damon Courtney. And writing your books and publishing them sets you up for the future. It's your legacy. So keep writing, keep publishing, and what you do today doesn't mean you have to do it tomorrow. Being exclusive to Amazon is a 3-month commitment. That's all. And you can request at some point, say, hey, can I be let out early if you want to go through a draft to digital, go wide and try to compete for a BookBub feature deal. And that will turbocharge your sales and your exposure, especially if you have a series. That's the great thing about BookBub. If you're a thriller writer, you want like a 3-book set, and then for them to buy your other 4, 6, 8 books in the series, put that 3-book set for 99 cents, and you with great covers, and you'll be competitive, and it'll change your dynamic of how sales. Yeah. So I'm a big fan. I mean, they are the gold standard. There are a lot of other things to do. You can spend an awful lot of money on ads trying to figure things out. And there are some people who can help you with some books, but still the one-stop shopping is a promotion, whether it's through ENT or Robin Reads or places like that. Free Booksy, if you've got a free book, they do really well for downloads. But you got to follow it up. It's part of an overall marketing plan to then sell the rest of your series. So if you have just one book, it's going to be difficult to make good money. So you keep writing. This is a great time to keep writing. Never been a better time to be an indie author. Thanks, Dan. I really appreciate the time.
I fully agree. For any of you who weren't familiar with BookFunnel or BookBub, Damon Courtney was on last Monday. And so you can check out our talk with him on our YouTube page or our Facebook page has the video. And then last Friday, Carlin Robertson from BookBub was on. And so those are both businesses that you should know if you're an indie author. You should be familiar with them, because they both offer great services. Well, thank you, Craig. Anyone out there, you can check out Craig at craigmartell.com. 20 Books to 50K is the group. Highly recommend you join that group and kind of see what they have to offer. They have a lot of questions already answered, so you can search within the group. Yep. It's just very helpful, and then kind of learn day to day what's changing. I know, like the other day when Audible right now, Audible is paying out authors more for audiobooks. Mm-hmm. And I heard that first on the 20 Books 50K group. So, well, thank you very much, Craig, for being on. You've really done an awesome job sharing with the indie community through both the Facebook group and the conferences. And we just really enjoy getting a chance to sit down and kind of pick your brain a little bit. So,
you bet, Dan.
Have a good day. It's nice to see all y'all. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
Vegas, baby.
That's it for this week's Self-Publishing Insiders with Draft to Digital. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts and share the show with your will-be author friends. And start, build, and grow your own self-publishing career right now at drafttodigital.com.